regulatory area. But I strongly believe that the bill which Senator Benson and I have introduced is an important step in the right direction. This bill would temporarily limit imports of Japanese cars to the annual average of the last 4 years. As much as I believe in free trade, I also believe automobile import restraints are necessary for the health of this basic American industry. It has been argued by some that we should let market forces resolve the problems faced by our auto industry and not interfere. But in this case, past government intervention in the marketplace helped create the mess we find ourselves in today. Unfortunately, Senator Dole could not join us today because he is still recovering from his recent illness. He is recovering well, I might add, and Senator Benson is honoring a long-standing commitment in Texas. Senator Benson's prepared statement is of critical importance to this issue. There are copies available at the press table, and I commend them to all who are following the state of the U.S. auto industry. Today, I'm pleased to welcome three distinguished members of the new administration who will be testifying. Ambassador Brock, Secretary Baldridge should be arriving shortly, and Secretary Lewis is already here. I'm anxious to hear their views on the problems facing the U.S. auto industry and on what Congress and the executive branch can do together to resolve some of those problems. Before we begin, however, I would like to say that I understand that the administration, which will have to negotiate these matters with the government of Japan, may not be in a position to offer a definitive program to this subcommittee today. We ask that the witnesses limit their prepared remarks to summaries of their written statements, which will be made a part of the record, so that as much time as possible can be left for discussion. Senator Chafee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of this committee, today's trade subcommittee hearing signals the beginning of a misguided retreat from support for freer international trade and a venture into the dangerous waters of protectionism. Once begun, the slide toward higher tariffs, special quotas, and other forms of protectionism will not be easily reversed. The ultimate loser will not be only the American consumer, but also the very industries that these practices are meant to benefit. The legislation currently before this subcommittee attempts to make a scapegoat of the Japanese automobile industry and to blame current difficulties of the American automobile industry on its Japanese counterpart. The implications of what is being proposed here today go far beyond autos and trade. For what is involved here is nothing less than the basic position of the United States as the world's foremost proponent of freer international trade. 2 points trouble me, Mr. Chairman. They are: first, the attempt to divorce the consequences of protectionist legislation benefiting the U.S. auto industry from its impact upon the broader spectrum of U.S. trade, both as it affects the costs of other imports and as it affects the competitive position of our own exports. Second, the attempt to resolve one basic policy question, how to deal with the deteriorating position of the U.S. auto industry here at home, by focusing not on legitimate questions of productivity, excessive wage rates, and marketing decisions of U.S. automakers, but by wreaking havoc upon another basic policy, namely the American position of leadership in moving the world toward freer international trade generally. On the first point, proponents of auto import protection show little comprehension of the complicated interdependence of American, European, and Japanese economies. The Japanese must export to finance their near total dependence upon imported oil, raw materials, and a substantial amount of their food. Lost automobile export revenues must be made up elsewhere through reduced Japanese imports of American agricultural products, and we would recall that Japan is our largest single customer for the bounty of our farms, through expansion of other Japanese exports to the United States, or through greater competition with our own exports into European and other markets. The American export surplus we enjoy in our trade with Europe, for example, will this year equal our deficit with our trade with Japan. Import protection for the American automobile industry, in short, is robbing Peter to pay Paul. It would simply force a reshuffling of trade, and any increased profits for Detroit would come at the expense of other, more efficient U.S. producers and their employees. This, of course, would inevitably lead to new demands for other trade barriers. Import restrictions are as contagious as the common cold, and they would not stop with automobiles, but would quickly spread to other commodities and manufactured goods. Since the early 1960s, under six different administrations of both political parties, the United States has convinced other nations to dismantle trade barriers and to open markets to international trade and commerce. These achievements have not come easily, but only after the most patient and time-consuming negotiations, and I think members of this committee are aware of that, those efforts as members of any committee in this Congress. The most notable and most diligently fought for efforts have been agreements with Japan to move toward a position of freer trade. In large measure, we have succeeded because of our own example. It is precisely because the United States offers one of the most open markets in the world that we have had success in convincing the Japanese and others to join us in lowering trade barriers. This brings me, Mr. Chairman, to my second major point of disagreement with this legislation, the confusion of policy objectives that this bill entails. The crux of the problem with the American automobile industry is not how open or how closed the Japanese economy is to foreign imports. In fact, the Japanese are taking significant steps to open their markets to more abundant imports from the United States and other countries. For example, Japan's tariffs on industrial products are generally lower than those of the European community on U.S. imports. The real issue here, Mr. Chairman, is the deteriorating position of the United States automobile industry and what brought Detroit to its present precarious position. I will not take time here to detail, Mr. Chairman, the abundant evidence which shows that imports of Japanese automobiles are not the root cause of Detroit's problem. Suffice it to say that excessive wage settlements, failure to keep pace with productivity, and marketing decisions which led American automakers to continue to emphasize large, fuel-efficient, fuel-inefficient automobiles, just as the buying public had caught up with the economic necessity of switching to smaller cars. All of these factors have had a more important bearing on Detroit's problems than imports. These were the findings of the International Trade Commission, the only independent, nonpartisan economic advisor on trade issues. Clearly, the current recession has added to these problems. But I wish to make mention of the wage costs in this industry. In 1980, the average hourly wage of major assemblers in the U.S. auto industry was $9.25 without fringe benefits. With fringe benefits, the average wage of the U.S. automobile worker has been estimated to be around $19 an hour. But I took solely major assemblers, the less skilled workers. These average hourly wages of these less skilled workers in the automobile industry are 50% higher than the average wage of a production worker in the United States and nearly 100% higher than the average wage of a production worker in my state of Rhode Island. Detroit's extraordinarily high auto workers' wage levels are in part responsible for its current problem. The United Auto Workers, said Robert J. Abernathy of the Harvard Business School in testimony last April before the Senate Banking Committee, has positioned the industry cost-wise to $500 to $600 per car level difference between the UAW wage and the average wage in the United States. When we are asked to restrict Japanese imports, Mr. Chairman, we are in fact asking U.S. workers and Rhode Island workers to pay hundreds of dollars extra for an efficient car in order to protect the job of an auto worker whose salary is nearly twice as high as those workers who are paying the price. Under this legislation, Mr. Chairman, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Mr. Chairman, I submit for the record a New York Times editorial of March 5th, 1981 on this subject. Thank you.